SMQB's episode 188. Welcome, listeners. We're down to Pope and Rooster tonight, hoping that House will join us during the show. Milk has chased the Bucks out to Kansas City, rooting his team on against the undefeated Chiefs.
Well, hubby has fun because that's a futile experience for him.
Bison has run off to Portugal with some hot blonde woman. We hope to see him back someday. Pope, who are you taking to the bar this week?
Well, you're going to hear more about the theme for me this week is the return of the ponies to the Hilltop and the highest ranking they've had since the death penalty. So I'm bringing one Eric Dickerson to the bar because he's been very instrumental in getting the team fired up, has been involved with the program since the ACC, and I'm sure he's got a lot of thoughts on where they're going from here and what the players and coaches are thinking. So, and you know, love to talk to Eric about back when he was here before NIL was cool.
back when he was unofficially enjoying the spoils of the NIL.
Indeed.
Who was his running mate? Craig James? Was that
Craig James, Pony Express.
Are they still buddies?
Yeah. They were on the ACC huddle pregame on the ACC network. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, I heard some distressing news today that Greg Popovich has some undisclosed illness. And I agree. I think he's one of the most interesting sports figures. Fascinating guy. People always say, well, if you had to invite six celebrities to dinner or something, he's always on my list. I think he'd be a fascinating guy to talk to. So I'd like to take him to the bar. I hope he's okay. He's 75 years old, and it's never good when you hear that somebody's got an undisclosed illness. So good luck, Pop. Good luck, Pop.
Get well, man. We need you back. You're a true character, NBA won't be the same without you not coaching.
Right. Especially tonight, the eve of the election. He's always got opinions that are great to hear, and I love the fact that he's got the nerve to share them. So NFL Week 9, the frickin' Washington Commanders have the same record as the Buffalo Bills, 7-2. What the hell is going on in this world? Who would have predicted that?
Juggernaut. They're a juggernaut.
They look like they can keep winning. I think they're going to win at least 10 games this year.
Well, I mean, if they don't win 10 games, then that would be a massive failure at this point.
They got
the Cowboys twice, so there's two.
They've got the Cowboys twice still, and I think they
the Saints.
They're finished with the Giants,
and they have the Saints and the Titans.
Yeah,
I mean, yeah, they're going to be no worse than 11-6. 12-5 is very realistic.
Amazing turnaround. The Eagles look like they're starting to find their way back. I just have to say, my main man, the legend, Saquon Barkley. I'm still so bummed that the Giants lost him to the Eagles. But
what was that 180 hurdle that he did?
That is, I watched in real time the OBJ catch. I saw the Garrett Wilson catch this weekend. Both amazing. None compare, and none will ever compare to that play I saw. Saquon first doing a spin move around the guy, and then while he still has his back to the next defender who's coming in at him, he jumps up in the air, spreads his legs out, and backwards leaps the guy. Well, I don't think I'll ever see a better play in football than
and lands basically as he's spinning around to go.
Yeah, unbelievable. Just
that's the ESPY right there. They should just go ahead and award him the ESPY, and then we'll have a race for some other second place.
I mean, I remember growing up watching film of the great Gale Sayers, who was before my time, and we all watched Barry Sanders. That play takes the cake and will never be repeated. That's just too good. Unbelievable. So hats off to Saquon.
And he had a big game.
Yeah. Two touchdowns, a lot of yards. He's the legend for a reason. So it looks like the Eagles are coming back. They can rely on Saquon and Hurts, and now that Devonta Smith is back in the fold, I think they can outlast the injury.
I mean, obviously, our little Philly friend who's not on here would be talking about how they almost lost to one of the worst teams in the league.
Well, they're because of mismanagement of the game by their coach. I think he's rightfully ticked off at Sirianni, who stinks.
They had to have an interception to seal the deal after going up 16-0.
But when you have four superstars on your offense, you can hang in there, especially this year when so many teams are bad. I mean, there are nine teams with two wins. It's amazing.
I would say the Cowboys would be just as bad as those two win teams.
Well, yeah, they seem to be getting worse.
I mean, it's, you know, let's talk about that for a second since we're still on the East. It is Rooster. It is as low enthusiasm as I can remember since moving to Dallas in 1985 in the end of the Tom Landry era, when the teams were bad. You know, Jerry Jones took it over and turned it around. But I mean, one year we went 1-15. The next year we won three games, and that's how we got Aikman. But at least there was hope. And then Jimmy Johnson, you know, came in and immediately there was a plan. I mean, you know, we laugh at the concept of a plan these days, but I don't even think the Jones boys even have a fucking concept of a plan. Zeke didn't make the trip because he's not getting enough carries. Well, he sucks. He gets 2 yards in a cloud of dust. Our running game's the worst in the league.
And you still can't defend the run.
Can't defend the run. I mean, McCarthy has to take accountability. Multiple times we had, one time on fourth and short, we had 12 men in the huddle and they had to punt. Another time they tried a ridiculous fourth down fake punt, which had no chance of working. And then on a crucial third down early in the game, the Falcons, we had 10 men on the field. And then on one touchdown pass, the two Diggs and the other guy ran into each other. I mean, it's a comedy.
You still have to play the Eagles and the Commanders twice each.
We have the Eagles and the Texans and the Commanders the next three games. Rooster, there is a very good chance that the Cowboys are going to be 3-8 going into the Thanksgiving game against the Giants. And just as I predicted to you guys earlier this week, Mike McCarthy will not be coaching this team for the national, televised game against the Giants.
Who will still have two wins at that.
Right. Maybe they should flex that and put it on, put that on the CW at 8 a.m. or something on Turkey Day. But wrong direction for the Cowboys. And Dak is hurt. Got his MRI results back today. It's going to be a multi-week absence. CeeDee Lamb has a bad shoulder. He's going to get further tests done. I mean, there's a chance he plays on Sunday against the Eagles, but look, Cooper Rush, he was 5-1 when Dak went down with a fractured thumb earlier couple of years ago. But there's some talk here. Why don't you just throw Trey Lance out there? I mean, we paid him. We paid him the money we could have paid Derrick Henry. Put Trey Lance out there and see if he's got it. I mean, there's nothing.
At least see if he's got any trade value.
Right. This is a contract year. I mean, and this is the opportunity. They're not going to make the playoffs. They're not going to even be .500. Their schedule is brutal. So the Cowboy Nation is mad, and they're getting madder on a weekly basis. And the Jones boys have real trouble on their hands. And it goes straight to the top.
Can anyone in the NFC beat the Lions right now?
Good question. I mean, they are putting a lot of points on the board. They would have put more points on the board except for that horrific conditions in the rain on Sunday. I'm looking at the top of each division. Do the Commanders have the best chance against the Lions right now?
I don't know if they might. Yeah, I don't know if they have the defense. The Lions, the thing the Lions have that some good teams don't have is an outstanding offensive line. And they can run the ball down your throat with two outstanding running backs.
Yes.
So teams like the Cowboys and to some extent the Commanders that struggle to defend the run are going to struggle against the Lions. I don't know who.
Goff is a great, you know, bus driver. He doesn't have to do anything spectacular, but I think I saw a stat the other day where now, and he's like in a 5 or 6 game streak, he's like 15 touchdowns and one interception. He's on an amazing streak, and you know, the Lions are just playing like they are the cream of I would argue sometimes, you know, the cream of the NFL, other than the team that's playing tonight.
We laughed when they hired Dan Campbell, and we're eating crow, man. He's turned into exactly what they needed for that franchise.
I think you were the king laugher too.
Yeah,
the Dan Campbell hire.
Well, the biting the kneecaps press conference was a little ridiculous, but you got to give the guy his due. He's turned into a hell of a coach. The other news in the NFC is that Christian McCaffrey is maybe coming back week 10, and every team in the NFC West is within a game of winning the division.
Right.
So, you know, if the Niners get healthy, maybe they can do it. Who knows?
I mean, that is the new, you know, NFC North. It is a mediocrity. I mean, the Cardinals are leading after 9 games, 5-4. You know, the one thing I've been watching all year is how well the NFC North has been stacking up. And with the Bears loss, that's a bad loss. Now, maybe Arizona is better than we think, but that's a bad loss by Chicago. That puts them at 500. So for the first time, the NFC North actually has a team that's at 500 because they were all over 500 and way over, you know, with their stacking up their victories.
The Vikings are coming down to earth, I think, a little bit. The Packers looked bad against the Lions. They had 3 points. For the majority of that game, they only had 3 points.
Yeah, Jordan Love made some really bad mistakes.
You mentioned the Cowboys are playing the Texans. I feel like the Texans are coming down to earth, and maybe C.J. Stroud is regressing a little bit. What's going on with them?
I don't know. It's
they lost, you know, to the Jets. I mean, who predicted? I picked them last week for my
For some reason, I mean, if you're ever going to wonder if a game is fixed, you got to wonder, right? The Jets had lost 5 in a row. They were awful. Their team was falling apart publicly. I'm sure in the locker room was even worse. And yet they were favored against the Texans, and sure enough, they damn sure won the game. I just don't get it, Rooster. And you know, I think the Texans could have had a bigger lead before halftime if they hadn't made some mistakes. So I don't know, but look in their division though, man. They're 6-3, and the Colts are the next closest team at 4-5.
Right, and they're going nowhere fast. So
I mean, there's no competition.
Chiefs and the Bills right now in the AFC, the Lions and who did we say in the NFC? The Lions, maybe the Eagles.
Well, and the Bills needed a 61-yard field goal as time expired.
And the Commanders, yeah,
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 yeah. I mean, I would be comfortable with the Lions, Commanders, Chiefs, and Bills. Is that your big four?
I think so. I do think the Eagles are going to continue to improve, and they're 6-2. I mean, like House says, they may be the worst 6-2 team in history, but 6-2 is 6-2.
That hurts. Is playing well again.
Yeah,
proficient. We'll see if losing AJ Brown's going to hurt him.
Right, depending on how long he's out.
Right,
they may need to pick somebody up.
But I predict a bloodbath on Sunday at AT&T at Jerry World. I think the Eagles are gonna do what the Lions and the Saints did and score a bunch of points in the first half and just embarrass them. Speaking of the Saints, we lost another coach this week.
Yeah, it's about time. She's terrible.
I got to tell you, when the Saints pasted the Cowboys, I was like, the odds of the Saints losing their head coach before McCarthy got fired was, you know, I would have taken a lot of money on the under. And
what they've lost, seven in a row. Just unbelievable.
Yeah. So was that the second or the first game of the year for them? They won the first two and then lost.
Yeah. Yeah. So the second game of the year, they beat the Cowboys, just crushed them.
Yeah, the Cowboys have taken some tough losses, including yesterday to the Falcons. But those teams have turned, just like Milk said, they just turned out to be not all everyone thought they were. Meanwhile, until all the injuries, the Bucs were chugging along. Now they're in trouble.
Do we look at the Falcons and go, now maybe they're a little bit more legit than what we thought? I mean, they're 6-3.
Well, Kirk Cousins is legit for sure. He's a gets you to the playoffs kind of quarterback. I don't know if he'll win the Super Bowl quarterback, but
I didn't follow it. I don't know how bad Drake London was hurt, but he went out in the first half. That's a big weapon. Kirk Cousins got some weapons.
Yep.
And Brian Robinson's run the ball. Bijan Robinson's run the ball well.
Speaking of the Saints, that reminds me, I have a punchable face. All right. Well, let's, you have anything else on the NFL before we get to our Plaxicos?
No, I mean, we're halfway through, basically a little bit over halfway now with a 17 game schedule. And I think it's clear as mud who are the playoff teams are going to be. I think the top teams are, what we said, Bills and Chiefs, no big surprise there. Bengals are playing better, so watch out for them. They could still make a run.
The thing that just amazes me is the number of 2-win teams. There's so many of them. You got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. So there are at least 8 2-win teams. So you could go through this season with 2 wins, and there are so many bad teams that you're not even guaranteed to get a decent draft pick. Still can't get your quarterback. That's how bad the year is. In fact, I thought the whole week was kind of boring. The game of the week was supposed to be the Lions and the Packers, and it really wasn't close till the end.
Right.
And then the Cowboys-Falcons game wasn't so great either because Dak got hurt. So anyway, well, let's go on to our Plaxico picks. Last week was a bad week for the SMQBs. We got out to a great start after week 8. We all had winning records, I think, or close to it. But last week, Milk took the Bucs plus 8.5 over Kansas City, and that remains to be seen. They're playing tonight. He's currently 4-4. You took the Saints minus 7 at the Panthers, which seemed like a safe pick.
Hey, I've been riding the anti-Panther bandwagon. It's been successful.
Panthers somehow win that game, so you're 5-4. Bison took the Eagles minus 7.5 against the Jaguars. Lost that one. He's 4-5. I took what I thought was the best pick of the week, Houston plus 1 against the Jets.
Yes.
And they lost, so I'm 6-3. And House riding the Commanders at 3.5, minus 3.5 against my Giants. Was the only win so far, unless Milk pulls out a miracle win, and he's 7-2. So this week, week 10, House goes first. He again is riding the Commanders, minus 2.5 at the Steelers. That could be a tough one. We'll see. I mean, Steelers are 6-2 also, aren't they?
That's a sneaky 6-2, and one of their losses is Cowboys. So go figure.
Yeah, but they've had some good wins too, right? I don't know. It's been Russell Wilson looked good last time they played before the bye. Now then they get a bye. I don't know. They could be a different team for the second half of the season if he's good. We'll see. But House has got Commanders minus 2.5 over them. I'm next, so I'm gonna take the Cardinals minus 1 at the Jets. I don't think the Jets can string 2 wins in a row.
No chance.
So I'm gonna go with the Cardinals minus 1. And then you are up next.
Well, why don't you go ahead with the ones that we already have from our
guys who are out,
and I'll pick the last.
All right. So Milk is 4-4. He's taking the Lions minus 3 at the Texans. Bison. Wow.
That is going to be a good game. An interesting pick, though.
Yeah. He must agree with me about the Texans going backwards here. Bison is currently 4-5. He's taking the Falcons -3.5 at New Orleans, which Falcons should win that game. But God, if the Saints have any amount of respect, they're going to play that, make that a tough game.
Yeah.
No. What do you have? What do you have?
Well, I'm not sure how Caleb Williams is doing, but the Bears have very few opportunities for wins. And because of a certain bet I made with a certain person on my staff, the Bears really need to win on Sunday. So I am going to take the Bears giving 6.5 at home against the Pats.
Yep. Well, that could be a good game. Two of the top three drafted quarterbacks last year, both playing well. Should be interesting. Of course, the Pats don't have as much firepower as the Bears.
Right. So, I guess a lot depends on if Caleb Williams is playing. I haven't seen his injury update yet.
All right. Well, listen, before we get on to college football, I'm going to take the punchable face out of order. Don't call it a comeback. It has to do with the NFL and the Saints. We brought up the Saints. Did you see the tweets by Mike Thomas, the former wide receiver for the Saints?
No.
Basically slamming Derek Carr during the game, live tweeting during the game, accusing him of being responsible for getting Olav injured, basically calling him ass, you know, suck.
Wow.
Terrible, a shitty, dumb. And, you know, the tweet, it sounded like a Antonio Brown tweet. Unintelligible,
right?
Hateful, stupid commentary. Not the kind of thing a person who's trying to get a job in the NFL should be doing. Because who wants that guy on your team? Who wants that guy in your locker room if that's what he's doing to his former friend and teammate on the Saints? Just dumb. And you could just tell from reading his stuff that he's dumb. So I'm going to punch you, Mike Thomas. Keep your damn mouth shut if you want to get hired by another team, because no smart GM wants somebody like that on the team.
Exactly.
All right, Pope. Take us to college football. How do things look for the current playoff picture?
So tomorrow is the official rollout of the first 12-team college football committee. We're going to see, you know, where these teams are falling. We can talk about that in a second. This week, just a real quick recap, it was a lot of surprises and teams probably not going to be considered for the playoffs now after really bad losses. So the biggest game, of course, was in Happy Valley, and Penn State, they can't get over the hump against Ohio State. They lose by 7. No. James Franklin's futility against the big teams continues. The big shocker, I would have to say, would be Louisville beating Clemson in Death Valley. Clemson had been playing a lot better since they got destroyed by Georgia, and they had the inside track on potentially the ACC bid, certainly to the championship game. Miami, kind of, what a tale of two halves. They did not play well in the first half, down halftime to Duke, and then they came out and they just smoked him in the second half. So Miami is now on the inner track to the ACC championship game. And the other big game was South Carolina in Columbia took care of A&M. It was close to the end, and they blew him out at the end. A&M, what a letdown after that huge victory they had the week before. And now A&M is potentially looking at on being on the out if they lose to Texas on getting into the SEC championship game. And of course, from my perspective, the SMU Ponies, for their first time since the death penalty, had a huge game at Ford Field, another sellout. They beat a previously undefeated Pitt team. They didn't beat them. They just smoked them 48-25, and Pitt scored two late touchdowns just to make it even that close. SMU is now undefeated in the ACC as well. They and Miami, if they went out, have the they're going to Charlotte for the ACC championship game.
Let me ask you this. What happens? Isn't next week LSU Alabama?
Yeah. So next week is an elimination game, LSU and Alabama. Loser of that is out.
Loser's out.
Loser's out. Doesn't even get to make an argument for an at-large bid.
What happens if Georgia loses to Ole Miss, which probably isn't going to happen, but what happens to Georgia?
Yeah, well, Ole Miss is out. But if Georgia loses to Ole Miss, then Georgia is, they might be, I don't know if they're in trouble to make the college football playoff because of the quality win against Texas, but they may be out of the SEC championship game. And then they may just have to, you know, kind of put their fate in the with the voters to get it, a high enough seed so they can get into college football playoffs. So, the big game next week is Alabama LSU. That's an elimination game. So we're gonna have the first rankings come out tomorrow. I think it's pretty clear just by looking at where the AP rankings are now. What we're gonna look at, and it's gonna be Oregon, Georgia, Ohio State, and Miami. The top four conferences are going to get byes. It should be in that order. And then the at-larges, if you just go by the rankings, you have Texas, Penn State, Tennessee, Indiana, BYU, and Notre Dame. Then Alabama is still there at 11 with two losses, the highest-ranked two-loss team. And then you got Boise State at 12. Now, Boise State would be the top-ranked non-power five conference, so they would get the number 12 seed at that point. The teams looking out first, let's call them first four out, would be SMU, LSU, A&M, and Ole Miss. And like I said, you know, some of those are going to probably fall this week.
Well, that would be really good for people who aren't big time into college football to see Boise State in the playoffs and they're
right.
Some running back and quarterback.
So, you know, just for the listeners who haven't really been following college football playoffs because we haven't talked about it, the format is the top four teams get a bye, and then the first round is going to be at the higher seed between 5 and 12, their home field. So this is what we will be looking at. We will be looking at Boise State going to Austin. We look at Alabama going to Happy Valley. Notre Dame would be going to Knoxville, Rocky Top. And then BYU would be going to Bloomington, Indiana. So that would be a lot of fun. I mean, that's why they did this. That's why they expanded it to 12. And then the winners of those games obviously would play in the top four who have byes. And that would be where we start the actual bowl games as we move up towards the final game.
All right, good job. Well, I really was hoping to avoid talking about this, but I guess we ought to talk about the World Series. I have to say, as a lifelong Yankees fan, that was the least joyful World Series experience I've ever had. Not once did I feel like the Yankees were going to win that series. All year long, their TV play-by-play guy, John Sterling, has been saying that they run the bases like they're drunk. And yep. They continue to do that and make stupid errors. And you just can't win a World Series when your best hitters are struggling a little at the plate, you're giving away runs on the bases and defensively. And that all has to fall on the manager. I'm sorry. It's been a trademark of Aaron Boone's teams that they're terrible on the base paths and don't play great defense. I think he needs to go. He got onto the World Series, so I bet you Hal Steinbrenner keeps him, but
yeah, I can't imagine.
I just think he needs to go.
I mean, but how do you defend that fifth inning meltdown?
The game was in hand.
Cole had basically a no hitter going into the fifth, and Judge, you know, just that's a little league play. Close the glove before the ball got there.
Yeah, Judd, Volpe, and then Gerrit Cole himself all made errors in that.
Yeah, what is your analysis of that? I mean, I think pitcher obviously the pitcher has to do it. No question.
He's got to hustle.
But that being said, Rizzo just assumed that he would be there, so he kind of played a little lollygag on it. Yeah, if he had been aggressive, he definitely would have won the bet.
He could have charged that ball and beat.
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't like some chopper. It was just a little dribbler.
There were both
It's like the Yankee version. It's like the Yankee version of Buckner in 86.
Well, you know, it's just lazy. They both assume the other guy had it, and that's not how you win baseball games.
No, it's not.
You have to execute that play the correct way every time, and not even think about it. Just do it.
So how different do you think the World Series would have been if Freddie Freeman hadn't hit the walk-off in game one?
I don't know.
The Yankees, I mean, they would have stole the game they wanted. Pressure on the Dodgers to win game two. I just, it feels to me, you know, it was a lot like Kirk Gibson when he hit his in 1988. The Dodgers just seized the advantage and ran the A's into the ground, and I felt like they did that against the Yankees with that momentum.
The Dodgers exploited the Yankees' glaring weaknesses, which in addition to base running, defense, and Aaron Judge's anxiousness at the plate during the postseason,
they have
kind of a weak starting pitching staff. And I said before, I said after the, I think it was the Cleveland series, they need to take Clark Schmidt out of the starting rotation. He sucked. And what do? They pitch him in game three instead of pitching Gil, or Heel, I think it's pronounced, G-I-L,
yeah,
or Marcus Stroman. They could have pitched either of those two guys who are experienced starters, and instead they pitched a guy who just has not had it in the postseason. Game three was basically thrown away, and it's not, you know, it's not one guy. Their pitching staff, like I said, Gerrit Cole and Rodon and Pray for Rain. That's pretty much it in the postseason with them, and that's not good enough.
Oh, it looked like late this afternoon, Cole accepted his, even though he rejected it at first, his what, 4-year, $144 million contract.
I think what he did was he said he's going to stay with the Yankees and continue to negotiate, but he's not going to shop around to another team.
I thought he accepted the original deal. Did he not this afternoon?
I just read a blog.
Yeah. And then I guess they're going to do a qualifying offer to Soto. What's your bet?
They're throwing around $600 million, right?
Yeah. I mean, as high a contract as you'll ever see.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Well, can't they do what the Dodgers did and pay him like $3 million a year and defer, you know, all that money like that Dodgers did with Ohtani?
Yeah.
Couldn't that be the paradigm for Dodgers, keeping those guys in the future?
Look, after the Dodgers got Ohtani, they got the prize pitcher out of Japan.
Yamamoto.
Who cost a ton of money because they had to pay the Japanese club just to negotiate with Yamamoto. And then they got Mookie Betts the year before. He's not cheap. I mean, they've shelled out some dough, and I guess they did it right so they can afford to keep going.
If Milk was on here, he would certainly argue that, you know, the Dodgers bought a championship.
Well, they did, but who can't throw stones, right? If you're a Yankees fan.
Certainly can't. No.
I will say this. I'm happy for Freddie Freeman. He's such a good guy. He's a real ambassador for baseball.
Great story.
It was good to see him shine like that. He really is a fantastic guy and a good player. You have any a lasso or any punchable faces you want to hand out?
Not this week.
How about
basically enough?
This could be a short one. You have any buzzers?
If I have to think about whether I have a buzzer, I mean, it was an interesting race. We could talk about that for a couple of minutes. Did you get a chance to see the Brazilian Grand Prix? I don't think we'll see another starting grid like that.
Anytime you have Ocon within five or so laps of the finish in first place, that's an interesting race considering he's on a crappy team and they fired him for next year.
Yeah, right. I mean, you know, but I do think it was that's Max clinching the driver championship.
Yeah,
starting off at 17, just did a, you know, real smart. Red Bull played it right, and there's no way anybody's going to catch him now. So he'll probably clinch in Las Vegas if he wins that race.
What's going on with Hamilton?
What happened? He
he didn't get he got kicked out of qualify. Well, I mean, he didn't make it past Q3, right?
He didn't make it past Q1. He didn't have a
Q2 right, Q1. Time. He didn't make it into the next right. Q2. I don't know. I don't know if it's a Hamilton problem or a Mercedes problem or the wet track or what it is, but I don't know. He'll bounce back. But you know, you have to wonder what Science feels like on a weekly basis, knowing that he's been on a career streak and now he's going to have to give up that seat next year.
Yeah. I don't understand that at all. I don't understand why better teams didn't try to sign him.
He's a good driver.
Then you go down to Williams.
Yep.
I mean, there's other teams like Aston Martin that could use him. He could replace either one of those drivers because Alonso's just too old. And Strauss, is that the other one, the owner's son?
Well, Stroll.
Stroll. He's terrible. He's not a good driver.
He's the only reason he's on the circuit because of his dad.
Right. Well, that's too bad, but I think Sainz will bounce back as well. He's young.
Do you have a buzzer?
I do not. So it's a quick one, quick episode.
Well, when we're without some of our firepower, you know, we have to.
Yeah. Well, we hope that Bison decides
to come back,
rejoin the United States of America after tomorrow. Yes.
Enjoy the Dura Valley, Bison.
We'll be back next week with or without Bison.
Yes, we will. And I feel like Toby will be back at some point to maybe have a punch to his own head coach after they blow the Cowboys out. Let's see what he says then.
Don't forget, listeners, if you've got anything you want us to talk about or any criticisms of Toby, send it to us at the mailbag, SMQB's mailbox at gmail.com.
And thank you to our sponsor, Assembly Software. Yeah. Lawyers out there listening, because we know we have a bunch when it comes to case management, use Assembly. We're trying their new product with the AI component. And as long as my computer doesn't become self-aware, I think we'll be okay.
At least one of you will be.
Yes, exactly.
All right, Pope. Good seeing right, you.
Rooster.
Next good, week, baby.
Good pod. Okay, take care.
The SMQBs are Brian Bandwagon Pope, who hails from Dallas, Texas, and has never met a first-place team that he didn't have a personal connection to. Michael Rooster Phelan, hailing from Richmond, and who roots for teams from New York, or is it Boston? I can't remember which it was. One or the other. Also, Patrick Milk Michler from Tampa Bay, and he is still massively in love with Tom Brady and will never get over his man crush on the GOAT. Toby House Milrod, a long-suffering sports fan hailing from Philadelphia, whose Eagles team, they're still looking for another quarterback. And I am Chris Bison Nace, hailing from Washington, District of Champions. Thanks for listening.